Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
It's hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin, and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast.
Y'all don't understand. I've never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon.
Perfect way to roll the episode. Hey, this is episode 151 of the Nasty Cast, everybody. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken, joined by resident eschewer of sleep, Ben Lee. What's up, Ben?
Oh, it's a little weird because I've been getting my sleep this week, but I've been getting too much of my sleep this week. Like I slept a normal amount last night. And then today, after recording my first podcast, the Launch Angle podcast, only on the Fantrax podcast network, I decided to take a nap, and it turned into, I guess it would be a four-hour nap. And that's bad, because I also didn't prepare for this show or the next show, so we'll see how bad it is on my end.
Boy Scout, you are not. Were you ever in the Scouts, Ron Rigney?
I think I lasted, one meeting in Tiger Cubs, and that was it. It wasn't for me.
No.
So, Nate, you have kids and stuff. When's the last time you can say you actually took a nap?
Oh, Lord.
Okay. All right. There you go. That's all I need to know. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
it's not a thing that exists.
Exactly. When you have kids. Okay.
Yeah. No, not at all. What's the last nap you've taken? Tweet us at NastyCastPod. You can also reach Van at ManlyVanLee or Ron at TheRealMody. You can email us if you want to reach us that way, nastytraxpods@gmail.com. That's T-R-A-X. And if you enjoy us, there is a couple of ways you can support the show. You can rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. Give us 5 stars and say glowing words about us, and we'll love you for a long time. You can also donate to our Patreon, patreon.com/nastypod. As far as that's going, Van, we are – what's the status of the feed? Feed check 2018.
Yeah, so, okay, here's how it's going to work. We looked into possibly being able to just transfer our feed from our current host to the Fantrax host, which is based on SoundCloud, and it's just not feasible or possible. So what we're going to be doing going forward is posting in both places. So the new feed is going to be up on the Fantrax radio or podcast network, excuse me. So we recommend that everybody change your podcast subscription or whatever to that. However, because we don't want to just cause mass panic because people aren't getting their Nasty Cast episodes, we'll also be posting it on our old feed as well. Now, the old feed will basically run like it used to with the ads and everything. However, the new feed will be ad-free and should be hopefully a little easier to access. So short answer is if you're listening to the show and you have a moment, go ahead and sign up for the new one on Fantrax Podcast Network. Just Google it, search it, whatever it may be on your favorite podcasting app. But for those who forget, which is all of us, and it would be me, I would do something like this. We will still have it on the old feed, at least for the foreseeable future, just to make sure that no one thinks we've up and disappeared.
There we go. Or up and vanished, much like another podcast that I've listened to. True Crime Podcast.
Up and vanished, huh? Anybody? Right?
Yeah, it was actually about you.
Yeah. Wow.
Talking about... Yeah, wow.
Wow.
Owen Wilson with a special guest appearance today. How about that? Wow. Really impressive. if you do like to listen to other podcasts as well, but you like our voice, you know what you can do to find the solution to that. You can listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball. It's the three of us talking about Dynasty Baseball type of things. Including farm systems, which we are wrapping up this week. We're going to talk about a few Red Sox, Giants, and Marlins prospects in episode 40, which we shall record as soon as we're done here. But on today's show, we have a lot to get to. We've got a bunch of call-ups. We're going to play a dude feud in a segment that we're bringing back from a few years ago. We're going to play legit or quit with a very special player, and we're going to do some waiver wire pickups. But before that, this is the Britisode, my dear gentlemen. I don't even know how to set this up exactly. we started, what was it, this last week on the show, we started our British accents, and Barry judged us and said that I was the best, but we're going to further test our mettle by British rapping verses from popular rap songs, I guess. Is that the best way to set it up?
I mean, I suppose that'll do.
That was very nice and succinct and to the point, yes.
Yes, so to decide who really has the best British accent, the only way to do it is with rap lyrics. So who's going to start us off here?
I haven't practiced, so I'm going to let you guys start it off first so I can kind of at least get my mind in the realm. So one of you guys go first, then I'll go second.
Nate, you're the host, so I think it should be you.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, this might be better because one of your accents might bleed into mine. So maybe it'd be better if I just go for it. And we don't have the backing tracks, unfortunately, so this is going to be like freestyling. Also, Van, there might be a lot of bleeps that you need to write down.
Yeah, I've already got my pen handy. Don't worry. Because there'll be bleeps on mine.
Also, I think I might just cut this verse in half so this doesn't go too long. So this is going to be British Forgot About Dre.
Y'all know me. Still the same OG, but a bit low-key. Hated on by most of these M-bombs with no cheese. No deals and no G's. No wheels and no keys. No boats, no snowmobiles, no skis. Mad at me because I can finally afford to provide my family with groceries. Got a crib with studio and it's full of tracks. To add to my wall full of plaques. Hanging up in the office in the back of my house like trophies.
Nicely done. Very good.
I'm pretty impressed. I like
that. Was excellent. That was excellent.
Should be.
I don't know if I can follow that up.
It was pretty succinct. It was delightful. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. You also don't have to bleep any of it, so.
Yeah, that part I don't, but I still already wrote down get ready to bleep things. So.
Yes. All right, Ron, you're next.
Okay, so I'll try to edit mine as much as I can. But we're doing a little NWA Straight Outta Compton. In the British accent. Straight Out Compton, crazy mofo named Ice Cube from a gang called N-Bombs with Attitudes. When I'm cold off, I got sold off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hold off. You too, boy, if you F with me, the police are going to have to come and get me off your ass. That's how I'm going out. For the punk mofo that's showing out, N-Bombs start to mumble. They want to rumble. Mix them and cook them in a pot like gumbo.
Wow. You both get applause for me on
not
that.
Bad. Bad.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
I mean, you've set the table, and I feel
bad. We're going to have to put a poll of this on Twitter.
A poll, yes. And I'm sad that people are going to have to hear me last because it's not going to be as good as you guys. So, and that's not just me being humble. That's the truth. So I present to you my rap battle in the Barry Baker voice, and that is, of course, Gin and Juice.
Mm. So later on that day, my homie Dr. Dre came through with a gang of Tangeray and a fat SJ of some bubonic chronic that made me choke. This ain't no joke. All I had to sit back up off it and sit my cup down. Tangeray and chronic, yeah, I'm f***ed up now. But it ain't no stopping, I'm still popping. Dre got some bitches from the city of Compton. To serve me, not with a cherry on top, because when I bust my nut, I'm raising up the cot. And I'm just going to stop there.
Oh, jeez. That's a good place to excellent. Stop.
That's a lot of bleeps in that one.
Which, by the way, we named this this is the Barry Bake Off.
Yes.
By the way.
And there's no baking involved. But don't get Nathan exactly started in the Great British Bake Off, because he'll drone on for a while about it.
That's right. Nothing I like more than baking, especially when I'm brandishing a British accent. Pip, pip, cheerio and all that. All right. Shout out to Barry. We love you. Let's move on to the news, though, shall we? It is Ronald Acuna Day. Happy Acuna Day, everybody.
Yay. Yay.
Feigned excitement, especially from Van. Van, why don't you go ahead and start us off here so you can just wrap us with
just
the wettest of blankets.
Crap on this. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, Give me your rest of season line for Ronald Acuna.
Well, it's you're being mean, but I don't believe he's going to perform poorly. I just, and I said before we started recording, I really hope he just comes out and hits like 240 and with like 12 homers and 15 steals. Something reasonable, something that's good, but something that's not, you know, top 10 player in baseball like everyone in the world seems to expect. I think we're in an era where this is the prospect game where people get so excited for the prospects. And while I will be the first to tell you that baseball has changed in that these prospects perform better when they first come up than they say used to, even say 10 years ago. But I don't foresee him coming out and going 30-30 just for the start of the season. Major League Baseball, this is the pinnacle of performance. This is the top of their game. This is the best competition they will ever face in the world. And I just don't know that I see him, you know, becoming the number one overall pick next year, just like so many people we see who talk about him appear so to throw out there. So I like him. I'm excited he's come up. Baseball is better off with Ronald Acuna in the majors. I just don't think he's going to be as good as a lot of people think.
Yeah, and like we were talking about before the show, too, he's long gone as far as anywhere to even make an attempt to get him. And if you're going to try to get him in a dynasty, at least in my dynasty, some of the prices that I've seen people pay for him, it's insane. And the thing you got to understand about the prospects when they come up, and hopefully, you know, I think, Van, you kind of touched on it a little bit, is there's going to be another shiny toy that's going to come along. And so you don't really need to give up all the farm to get this guy. And there's also other prospects that are a little bit lesser that we'll talk about later on that might be a little bit cheaper, might be some guys, you know, that you don't have to pay all this money for. The other thing is, too, I'm interested to see, and I kind of compare this with Byron Buxton getting the call up a few years ago with, you know, he came up and we know he's had his struggles and he's been up and down and back and forth. So how do you handle that in a yearly league? Do you keep putting him on your bench and using that bench spot? So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. I think we said earlier he did record a hit tonight so far, so nothing flashy, but he did get on base, so that's a good sign. But I'm interested to see what happens if he does call up and get called up and struggle a little bit, and if they're willing to just kind of let him figure it out at the major league level, or they're going to do the back and forth a little bit, like kind of like the Buxton scenario we saw with the Twins.
I think he's going to have to be pretty bad to get sent down. I think he's just up indefinitely, unless he's just got awful. I wouldn't be surprised if he does put up like a 2020 season from here on out with a 270-ish average. He might strike out quite a bit, but you know who doesn't these days? But he's got such great speed that he'll be able to post plus BABIPs, and we've seen him crush balls. So, you know, and not in like the painful vice grip kind of way, in the good way that makes us happy in fantasy. So, you know, if you have him, you should be very excited for today. It came 12 days after I had predicted, because I thought it was 13th was that magical day, and they did hold him down a little bit longer, but he should be able to return plenty of value for you from here on out. And there was something else I was going to say, and I can't think about it anymore.
Well, real quick, too, you don't send Peter Borges down for just anybody. So that was the move that they made. So, I mean, he's probably up to stay. So,
indeed. Damn it. I forgot my other point. It's like I should have taken a long nap like you, Van, before the show. But let's move on then to another call-up. We've got a whole gravy boat of call-ups this week. We've got Walker Buehler who got the call. Let's go to you on this one first, Ron. Do you think that Walker Buehler is going to be sticking around, or is he just going to kind of be playing the up-and-down game for the short term?
I think he gets it's hard to say. I'm on the fence on this one because, I mean, he looks so good at times, and then he looks at times like he's not quite ready yet. But I think they're kind of getting to a point where they need to just kind of leave him alone and take the kid gloves off and give him a few starts up the major league level and see what they can do. The only thing I worry about him, though, is if he does stay up, what the innings limit's going to be. Is it going to be at 150? I think I read that somewhere where it's going to be a 150 inning cap. So you might be limited with the innings that you're going to get, but it could be some quality innings. But you also have to, just like with any young pitcher, you have to take the good with the bad. But as far as just from a stuff standpoint, he has some of the best stuff out there. I think majors, minors, whoever. I mean, he's top notch. And so I'd like to see him get an extended run. I think he will. And then you have, but the other thing they have too, is they have quite a, crowded rotation too, because you have obviously Kershaw, you have Hyunjin Ryu, you have Kenta Maeda, and Rich Hill is going to be Rich Hill. I didn't even realize Rich Hill was on the DL with another hand issue. I saw where he has. Am I right in seeing he has a cracked fingernail?
Yeah, and he was mad about it. Like, he was upset that they put him on the DL because he didn't think it was an issue. But the Dodgers were like, well, everything's an issue with you, so just deal with it.
Yeah, and which you feel bad with the guy, because you wonder, like, if it's some kind of chronic thing that he just can't get around. I don't know, because I don't know if I've ever heard of a pitcher have this many issues that are, like, blister and fingernail related. So, I mean, there's going to be probably a spot in the rotation for him, too. So I'd love to see him get an extended look. I think that they will, because I think it's getting to a point where they have to kind of see what they have in him at the major league level.
Yeah, and I like him a lot as a prospect. In his debut, 5 innings, didn't give up a run. I think gave up 4 hits and a couple of walks, struck out 5. So he did fine. And I think the kid gloves are going to be on him. So I think you're right. Not only are we going to have an innings pitched limit, but I think that not only applies to games started, but to just the actual games he starts. I think he goes 5 innings, 6 innings, like maybe 80 to 90 pitch count type starts. As far as him sticking around, he's going to start one of the games of the doubleheader coming up on Sunday. We know that. And then from there, we don't know, because Rich Hill will be ready to come back off the DL. However, the Dodgers were kind of notorious for this over the last couple of years, where it's a revolving door. They have a lot of pieces, so they bring guys up to first start here, send them back down. And I think that's going to be what we see from Walker Buehler, which is disappointing as a fantasy owner. But I do think when he pitches, he's going to provide you at least, you know, that Rich Hill style value, because I think he's going to be pretty good in the innings he throws. I would say maybe 20 starts this season, 20 to 25. I think it's going to be closer to 20 than 25.
Yeah, I've definitely babied him along, and I really think that's going to hinder his value quite a bit. You know, you love these on the Dodgers as far as wins go, but how many times is he actually going to pitch 5-6 innings? You know, the Dodgers are one to go into their bullpen pretty early and often with all of their other pitchers anyway, never mind Walker Buehler, who, like you both said, they've been treating with big time kid gloves, you know, throughout the minors. That's not going to let up anytime soon. So I don't think you're going to get a pile of innings. And that's kind of what had pushed him behind the likes of like a Michael Kopech, who we still haven't seen yet in the minor leagues, but also Forrest Whitley, you know. So I like those guys better than Buehler, just because, you know, how many innings are you really going to get from him? I do think that the ratios will be there, you know, the strikeouts and everything, but I'm just not sure he's going to give you enough innings to, like, truly be a difference maker for your fantasy rosters. Gleyber Torres, though, maybe a different story with him. Van, we'll kick this one to you first. Do you think he's up for good?
You know, I was a little surprised he actually called him up. I thought they would adhere and stick to just kind of what they were using with the Neil Walker and the Tyler Wade and just Miguel Andujar and what they had in the infield, even though it wasn't ideal, simply because their offense hasn't been the problem with their slow start. It's mostly been pitching, and the offense slow starting could have been attributed to the fact that Gary Sanchez wasn't hitting anything, the fact that Giancarlo Stanton wasn't hitting anything. So I really didn't see them pulling up Gleyber Torres. In fact, when I predicted it earlier in the year, I thought maybe June, just because I thought they really weren't that invested in him until, you know, unless something catastrophic happened. Nothing catastrophic happened, and here we are. They called him up, and I think that's great, because he's already had a couple of hits. He's performing decently enough, and I think since they called him up, they're committed. This is kind of a new Yankees style of play that's coming to prominence since the, you know, old Steinbrenner days, where they're more likely to trust one of these young guys than to just go out and buy someone. So I like it. I think if you drafted him as a hold piece in either a redraft or a dynasty league or anything like that, you're excited and ready to have Gleyber Torres on your team. Now, he's also not going to impact in the same vein that Acuna might, but I think he's going to be a really good piece for your team. So I like him being called up. I think he stays on the team for the rest of the year, and I think he performs fairly well.
Yeah, and I think one of the deceiving things about him is when you look at his age, he's only 21, but he's been in the minor leagues between the Cubs and the Yankees since 2014. So he's definitely, you know, we always use that term as far as a minor league seasoning. I think he's definitely got enough seasoning to be called up. And I think, like Van said, they're going to find a way to get him in the lineup because I think it's just kind of his time. I mean, I don't think there's really much for him to prove in AAA. The only thing I think that when I look at that lineup, I wonder where he's going to be hitting in the order. I'm looking tonight, and I think he was hitting – yeah, he actually is hitting – ninth tonight. So he's hitting. If he can get moved up in the order a little bit, of course, I don't know where you're going to put him any higher than maybe like about six, I guess, with the boomers they have in the middle there and the man-child Didi Gregorius, who is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame at the end of the summer. But other than that, I mean, you like him, but you got to understand what you're going to get from him. I think when I look at Gleyber Torres, I think he's going to be one of those guys that, you know, that when you're watching a game, the caller guys are going to call him a professional hitter. I think that's mainly what you're going to get. The average is going to be there. He's going to walk. If he starts to settle in and walk a little bit, the OBP is going to be there. And I think you're going to get decent counting stats. I don't think you're going to get a crazy amount of homers from him. He's not a big pop guy. You might get a handful of steals. So, I mean, you know, maybe like 15-15 high side potential, but it's hard to say because he is still fairly young, so we'll see. But overall, I think he's a good piece for you, but kind of like Van said, you just have to kind of understand what you're getting from him. It's not going to be this huge impact, but it could be a nice kind of mid-level guy there that you don't really look at for too much flashy production, but is going to help you out in a few categories.
And I think you'll get enough production across the board for him to warrant a pickup in 12-team leagues, you know, which is very shallow as far as I'm concerned. That's as shallow as I'll play. But if, you know, all it would really take is like an injury to Brett Gardner, who's been, you know, been one to get nicked up over the years. And maybe if at that point Torres has hit his way into the comfort zone of the Yankees brass, and I'll move him into leadoff, which would be incredibly valuable as far as runs scored. I mean, talk about hitting one in that lineup versus nine. It's obviously a great lineup anyway, but that would definitely be a boost to his value. So yeah, pretty much all formats, I'm definitely taking a look, but like you guys said, he's still just 21 years old, so you kind of got to keep your expectations a little bit in check. But just being in such a great lineup should help, even at the bottom of the order, his runs in RBI. So another call up here, we've got Jack Flaherty, who has been called up to replace old man Wainwright in the Cardinals rotation. He has hit the disabled list. So Jack Flaherty, we saw him flash brilliance before, Ron. So are you expecting Flaherty to stick around even when Wainwright is back? Is Flaherty here to stay?
I mean, it's tough to say because I look at Wainwright and he's kind of at that stage of his career that if he hadn't been such a key piece of what the Cardinals have done over the last probably 8 to 10 years, I think it'd be a lot easier to move on from him. But he's one of those franchise guys that you kind of feel like I think the Cardinals feel like they have to kind of keep him in the rotation. But there's got to be a point where they got to get tired of him getting blown up. So I don't know necessarily if he's going to stick around just yet. I mean, he's done nothing to except plead his case. I mean, his first start this year, 5 innings, looked solid, didn't allow any home runs, you know, looked good across the board. And he's one of those control guys. He's not going to be, you know, ultra, you know, flashy as far as strikeouts. But I think overall that they got to keep him up. I don't know if they will, though, just because it is Wainwright. I think the name is more what's keeping Wainwright in the rotation than the production, obviously, as we've seen, because he's definitely tailed off the last couple of years.
I could agree with that. And I mean, I watched a lot of Cardinals. I'm in Missouri. I talked to a lot of Cardinals fans, and Wainwright is beloved here. He's in the final year of his deal. And I mean, on the starts he's made this year, they haven't been great by any stretch of the imagination, but he has put up a 3.45 ERA. So if he can keep the ERA right around 4, I think that he's the guy, and I don't think Flaherty's really going to challenge him for that spot. However, there's also other question marks on the team, so it all just depends on, number one, how long this injury keeps Wainwright out, which it's elbow inflammation. So this could be really bad. It could be no big deal. We'll find out soon, I suppose, and if anyone else gets hurt on the team. So I think Flaherty's the number 6 guy, so he's definitely going to get innings as they need for the situation, but I don't think Wainwright's going to be the guy they bump just to get Flaherty in there if they, you know, really, really want to get him in the rotation. So it's worth monitoring anyway, at least.
Yeah, it's worth picking him up for sure, and spot starting him while he's up. But I agree that Wainwright will probably boot him back down to AAA if there's no other spots available when he's back. I know there's talk about pushing Wainwright to the bullpen, but you know, like you said, if he's not really struggling, then I don't foresee that happening just because he is you know, such a highly I don't know, appreciated guy there. It's hard to, you know, he's not Matt Harvey. It's not just so easy just to throw him into the bullpen, even though he has been pretty bad over the last couple of years.
Maybe he hasn't been Matt Harvey bad.
Yeah, not quite that bad. And he's definitely got a better head on his shoulders than that guy. So, yeah, I think Flaherty probably does come back down when Wainwright is back. But perhaps in a similar situation here, let's see, who are we on here? Van? David Dahl? He's up. Do you think he's going to be getting enough playing time to be picked up in all leagues?
I don't, because I think, well, we have Carlos Gonzalez on the DL, and we have Gerardo Parra serving a suspension. So the only reason he's up is because of those two guys. Now, if I'm the Rockies, I don't know why I picked David Dahl to call up. I don't know why I didn't go with, you know, just another piece that I'm not going to consider.
He's actually healthy.
Well, yeah, and I get he's healthy, but I would rather just have just some guy from the minors come up rather than mess around with David Dahl's developmental, because he comes up, he plays 4, 5, 6 games, and they send him back down. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, maybe he'll play a little more than that because they'll keep him as the fourth guy with Parra coming back, but I don't know. So I think the guy that, if Parra comes back and let's say even Cargo comes back, the person they're going to be more inclined to give playing time to is going to be Ryan McMahon, which they still haven't been inclined to give playing time to. So I would monitor that situation pretty heavily, because I just don't think Dahl's going to get it. And I think he's also probably going to get hurt soon, which will negate all of it. But while he's playing really well. He's hitting .333. It's in 13 plate appearances, a couple runs, an RBI. He hasn't homered, but he's walking, is striking out way too much, but it's small sample size. So I don't know. I like him while he's up, and I'll probably plug him in my lineup a few times in leagues that I have him, but I am not expecting him to stay up for long.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, you know, we talked about with Acuna, some of the guys underneath him that you might be able to get for cheaper. Dahl's one of these guys that kind of falls into the category. We'll talk about another one here in a second, of these teams that are just overly crowded with players at certain positions. And Gleyber Torres, once the Yankees are kind of firing on all cylinders, there's a few guys in that infield, a few infield pieces there as well. It'd be interesting to see how they handle all that. But with Dahl being called up, you got to get him in your lineup while he's up, because he's been hitting cleanup. He hit cleanup again tonight, had two more RBIs. You know, he's hitting .313, OBP of .353. So he's getting it done now that he's healthy and now that he's in the lineup. So I don't think he's going to be somebody you can rely on for consistent production for a very long time. Plus, too, you always got to – I'm a little skeptical as well, because I want to see that he's going to be healthy for an extended period of time. So it'd be interesting once again to see how they handle this, if he's going to be another situation where he gets called up and down, because, you know, like Van said, the Ryan McMahon experiment really hasn't worked out because he hasn't been able to be put in the lineup. But you can't argue with Dahl's talent. I mean, he's a guy that's right there. You know, he's definitely a guy in dynasty leagues that you got to have. I don't know if you got a big enough bench to keep him if he gets sent back down, though, in yearly leagues. But while he's in there, put him in there, because he's hitting in the middle of a good lineup.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the pickup while he's up. I think this may be one of the cases where he might just sort of force the Rockies' hand and like hit so well that they sort of have to keep him up. But somebody else is going to have to go, because, you know, Gerardo Parra, it's not like they can just send him back to the minors. And it would be pretty tough for them to just like DFA Carlos Gonzalez at this point, after just paying him, you know, not exactly an exorbitant amount of money, but still that wouldn't look very good at this point. So I do think that once both of those guys are back, it's going to be pretty hard to find at bats for David Dahl. And I guess the Ryan McMahon argument kind of goes against what I was going to say, that you want to get this guy consistent at bats so that, you know, he doesn't sort of just rot away. But they didn't seem to worry about that with Ryan McMahon, who's been with the team all year and hasn't hardly played. So maybe I'll just throw up my hands a little bit on that one. But I mean, yeah, you got to love a guy in Coors. So he's a pickup in all leagues while he's up, no doubt for me. Ron, we'll stick with you. Lourdes Gurriel joins the Jays, at least for a limited time. But are you as excited about Lourdes as you are about the likes of Gleyber Torres and David Dahl?
I probably put him third on this list. Not that I'm not excited about him, but I just don't know necessarily if he's going to get the extended playing time again. And, you know, based upon the season that he had last year, very unimpressive last year, definitely different hitter this year. But the problem is it was at Double-A last year, didn't really impress, came up from Double-A again. That's a pretty big jump as far as making that jump to the majors. But he was hitting well. He's hitting .347 at Double-A. He's a middle infield guy. They have Devin Travis, who's off to an awful start. They have Aledmys Diaz, Troy Tulowitzki. I don't know why they keep him around. I don't know why he's not just sent packing somehow. But when those guys come back, if you know, they'll be in the lineup, and I don't know really where he's going to play unless there's a trade. So I like him. I like the talent. He's still young. He's only 24. I think he's a guy definitely that you need to at least have on your watch list, because if they do make a move, or if somebody, you know, Troy Tulowitzki is out for an extended period of time like he tends to be, or Devin Travis is also an injury risk as well, in addition to his, I think, 169 batting average. So I like what Gurriel does, but I just don't know. Once again, I don't think that the playing time is going to be that consistent.
See, I'm not a big fan of Gurriel at all. I think he's batting average and nothing else. He's also, I know it's only 11 plate appearances, but he has one of my favorite triple slash lines in baseball when it happens, which is that all three numbers are the exact same. He's hitting 273, 273, 273. The power isn't phenomenal, and a lot of scouts worry about if it's going to play up in the majors or not. The speed is kind of there. Like, he can steal a couple bases here and there. But it's just not a guy I really want to roster unless I'm in, like, I don't know, at the very best, a 15-team league as maybe a middle infielder. And even then, I'm still going to be kind of wary of doing it, because I just really think he only presents the one benefit, which would be average, because he doesn't walk. The strikeouts aren't low, so that helps with the average, but I don't think he's going to score a lot of runs, drive in a lot of runs, any of that. Now, as far as his actual playing time goes, I saw or read somewhere that someone suggested that Devin Travis be sent down, which I kind of agree with, because he's really messed up right now, and they need to get him right, because I think he has more talent than Gurriel if he's healthy. So I could foresee that happening, which means that Gurriel could stay up, but once Josh Donaldson comes back, I think that all pushes Yainer Solarte into more of a utility role, which is what Gurriel's playing right now. He started a couple games at short, a game at second. So I don't know if that keeps him up once Donaldson comes back, just for that very reason, because Solarte is a better player than Gurriel is, in my opinion. So we'll see. It's not a guy that I'm going to take a flyer on right now, just because I don't want to spend any fab on it unless I'm super desperate, just because I think the opportunity is kind of murky here. So I don't want to invest too much time, effort, or energy into it.
Yeah, I'm also not bothering to put in any claims for Gurriel. He's just nothing. I mean, if he was pretty much, as soon as the Jays got their hands on him, you know, he was a big prospect name when he came over with Yuli. And once they got their hands on him and scouts saw him, they're just like Fizzle City. Like, this guy is not much of anything. I don't even know if he'll give you that average. He just won't strike out a lot. He just makes a ton of contact. So he is just a totally bland middle infielder, as far as I'm concerned. You know, with the likes of Aledmys Diaz and Devin Travis, as far as roadblocks, if you're dealing with somebody, you know, not even Gleyber Torres level, since obviously he's a top prospect, but if I had any interest in, you know, whoever this would be besides Gurriel at all, then I would not see those guys as roadblocks. I'd be a lot more interested in it. But I just do not care about Gurriel, and it's probably just a matter of time. Like you said, whenever Donaldson gets back, I think Gurriel's back down. Van, we'll stick with you here. Tyler O'Neill, we kind of missed him last week. I think his call-up pretty much coincided with the time that we were recording the show. But anyway, what do you foresee from the Tyler O'Neill? He's kind of a polarizing prospect.
He is. But before I really get into that, I want to make one point, which is that, of course, the Gurriel brothers are brothers, Yuli and this guy, whatever it is. Anyway,
Swedish.
The thing I want to, yeah, that guy's Swedish. point I want to make is that, have either of you guys played the old Command and Conquer video games?
Negative.
I'll take that deafening silence as no.
Yeah.
Command and Conquer is, and I'm sure you've heard of, like, StarCraft.
Weren't those PC games?
Yeah, they were. And
okay, I know what they are, but I've never played them.
The concept of it was, it's a weird future where Hitler never came to power, and instead like Russia became the main antagonist of World War II. So you basically, you can pick your faction of the Axis or the Allies. The Allies include Germany and the U.S. and France and England and all that stuff. But anyway, it's a real-time strategy thing where you create buildings and infantry. So you can have like gunners and grenadiers and rocket launcher guys and tanks. And then you battle it out on a map with another person. However, the best thing that ever came out of these games were the like quick time style like cutscenes where they had actual actors act. And the bad guy's name for the Russians was named Yuri, Y-U-R-I. And every time I see Yulievsky Gurriel, that's all I can think of. And I want everybody to stop what you did. No, I want you to finish the podcast. But then I want you to go like YouTube scenes of Yuri, because it's this over-the-top acting. And he looks like a cross between Lenin and Stalin. And it's just so weird. And he has a Tesla coil in the background at all times. It's just bizarre. But that's what I think of whenever I hear of Yuri.
Does Rasputin have a role in the game?
I wish. Rasputin's amazing. I hope you're listening to that series on the last podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's amazing. Rasputin. Oh, man. All right. I'm going to get back on track here. Tyler O'Neill. I like Tyler O'Neill a lot. He's a guy that I've been following for a little while, mostly because he was traded to me in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League last year. However, I don't think his call-up was the smartest thing in the world because there's nowhere for him to play. He was called up as insurance because Tommy Pham was having some groin issues, but Pham says he's fine. In fact, he came in to a game and I think went 5-for-5 the other day or did something really well. So I think we see O'Neill get sent down soon. He, in my opinion, is kind of along the Joey Gallo ilk of that he has prodigious power. The average isn't going to quite be there, but I also think it's going to be way better than Gallo's. Like if Tyler O'Neill hits 240, that wouldn't surprise me. If Gallo hits 240, then he's going to be an immensely valuable player. But I think the home runs would be there. And O'Neill does walk, maybe just not quite as much as Gallo, but I think he has the potential to be a really good baseball player, but I don't think he's ready. I think he's ready for it. I just don't think the Cardinals have a place for him. So until or unless some injuries or trades happen, he's just going to be a fourth outfielder piece, and he's not really going to help your team in any regard.
Yeah, same here. Don't spend your fab on it unless on these guys if there's not a clear path to playing time. I mean, you've got Marcell Ozuna, you got Tommy Pham, and you got Dexter Fowler. Who are you going to sit in favor of Tyler O'Neill? The answer is nobody. And we talked about their system a few weeks ago. We compared him and Harrison Bader, and they're both actually up at the time. Right at the time being, I don't think that is the case for much longer. But he's not going to see the field enough for you to waste fab money on it. So don't do it. And plus two, he hasn't really. I mean, I know he's only had 6 at bats. He hasn't recorded a hit yet. So, not really a need to run out and get him. Obviously, Dynasty, he's going to be long gone. If you can get him in Dynasty still, definitely do it. But yeah, yearly leagues, don't waste your fab money on it. There's no playing time to be had.
I'm actually taking this opportunity to sell in Dynasty leagues if I can. I'm definitely on the other side of the coin as far as being a non-truther, I guess, of Tyler O'Neill. I don't think he has the prodigious power of a Joey Gallo, and he definitely does not have the approach of a Joey Gallo because he doesn't walk anywhere near as much. So I think at this point he's just kind of beating up on minor league pitching, and I'm not saying that he'll be nothing. Like just because of the power, he could be at least like a Randall Grichuk type, and have sort of be one of those tertiary outfielders that maybe come and go. But I'm just not super super high on Tyler O'Neill. There's enough other power only prospects that come up that will probably cost you less. So right now I'm trying to cash in actually on O'Neill if I can in Dynasty. So with that, let's take a quick break here and come back with an interesting segment that we haven't done in quite some time.
Nasty.
Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, everybody. It is the nastiest cast that I know, and we're bringing back a segment that we have not done in nigh upon 2 years. I don't know, something like that. It's been a while since we've had the old hosts, but we're going to bring it back, the Dude Feud.
Wow,
Quack Davis,
Juan Soto,
Lance McCullers,
Justin Upton,
Delino DeShields,
Franklin Barreto,
Carlos Rodon,
Whit Merrifield,
and of course, Hoog Bowell.
So how we do this is we're going to take some players who have potentially seen their values rise or tumble, and we're going to sort of pit them against the ADP that was only from a couple weeks ago, since, you know, it's still a little bit too early to go with like in-season stats rankings. So we're just going to go off of ADP since that was just from a few weeks ago. But we're going to start off, Van, with you here, Sean Manaea, who just tossed a no-hitter. That was very exciting. And so we're going to see if his value has taken off through the roof or if you're still kind of not fully sold on him.
Well, I mean, the first thing working against him is that his name should be Sean Manaea because it's spelled S-E-A-N. So, yeah, I mean, he already has that knock against him. But the no-hitter obviously kind of moves the needle back the other direction. So we'll see. We'll see how I value him.
Okay, well, he was the 71st starting pitcher drafted, according to Fantrax HQ ADP, right behind Ervin Santana, who has yet to throw a pitch this season. So already, yay for Sean Manaea. So assuming that he's at least in the top 50 for you, let's find some other guys. They're doing pretty well. What about John Gray, who just pitched a gem tonight, 11 strikeouts and 6 shutout innings at Coors? Are you going with Manaea or Gray?
Gray has struggled a lot this year despite this start. And I actually went over this on the Launch Angle podcast with Jeff Zimmerman about what has changed. And he apparently has been releasing his pitches at a different spot. So, for example, his fastball is being released at release point A. His breaking pitch is, you know, maybe a few inches to the right or to the left where his arm finishes up. So Jeff surmises that he's kind of tipping his pitches a bit. The velocity's good. Everything else appears to be good. And he thinks that that simple mechanical correction can make him better. And I'm all in on John Gray. So I will say no to John Gray because I think he's ace material.
Oh, I was on board until you called him an ace, but I do like John Gray quite a bit, and he was at number 40, so we're inside the top 40 now. Actually, at 39 was Johnny Cueto, and that brings up something that I was going to mention. I tweeted a poll out to the Twitchosphere. Of course, you can follow me at Nathan Dockin, and I tweeted out, who would you rather have the rest of the season? And I included Sean Manaea in that. I also included Johnny Cueto, who is off to a hot start. I also included the next guy that we're going to talk about, Blake Snell. And, who's the fourth guy? I can't remember. But, I should pull that up. But it was almost a dead split. It was crazy. And actually, Sean Manaea came in last, and Johnny Cueto won. It was almost a dead split. Johnny Cueto had like 31%. Is he going to be your favorite here as well, or are you putting Manaea over him?
I think with Cueto, I'm a little afraid that the strikeouts just aren't quite going to be there that they have in the past. But I also worry a bit with some injury issues because he missed the last half of the year last year with whatever it was. However, if I also look at Manaea's innings total, he only threw 158 and two-thirds last year, whereas Cueto threw 147 and a third. So they're pretty even in that regard. Health-wise, I think I'm going to give the edge to Manaea, but I think performance-wise, I'm going to give it to Cueto. So if I want to consider that into the factor, I think I'm going to go ahead and stick with Cueto. I just think that he's shown a different level, and if he can tap into that different level, can provide a little bit more value. So I'll stick with him in that regard.
All right, and Jameson Taillon was the other person in that poll,
yeah,
I recalled, and
that's clearly not relevant anymore.
Obliterated today, and his last two starts have not been great. What about at number 30, Zach Godley, who outside of one ungodly walk-centric start has been pretty solid, but he's at starting pitcher 30.
Yeah, you know, Godley was an interesting guy to me in that I didn't quite believe it, but he's continued to perform. I think the FIP and the XFIP, you know, your secondary ERA indicators, really like him a lot. And he can strike out more. However, the control hasn't been too awful good, although it does match last year's mark of 308. I'm going to go with Gottlieb on this one. I think he plays on a better team, too, so that if you're playing on a team that values wins, although we can't really, you know, say, hey, he's going to get more wins because he's on the better team, I think that's just playing the odds. So I'll stick with Gottlieb on this one as well.
Okay, well, that's probably about where his home is then, somewhere in the early 30s around, well, Kyle Hendricks, Luke Weaver. Obviously, Sonny Gray is off to a really rough start, but Lance McCullers, kind of in that range. That sound about right?
Well, I mean, that's maybe too high. I'm saying I'm taking the other guys over him, so I would still keep him in, like, I'd take Gio Gonzalez over, or I'd take him over Gio Gonzalez. I'd say that. Stroman, I would take over him. Rich Hill, I would probably take Manaea just because I think he's going to pitch a little more. I'd put him in that mid to late 30s. That's where kind of where I'd sit with him.
Very good. All right. So Blake Snell, Ron, he's one of my favorites. He is a hashtag dude for me. Let's find a new home for him. He's off to a very good start as well. So let's start off with somebody else who was in that poll with Jameson Taillon. He started off really well. He's tailed off. He's Taillon'd off. He was a starting pitcher 47. So Blake Taillon for the rest of the way.
I got to go, and this is 100% me not being a homer here, but I'm going to go with Blake Snell in this case just because I think what we've seen so far this season, he's been more consistent than Jameson Taillon what has been. And Jameson Taillon, this has kind of been his M.O. The last few times he's gotten called up, you'll see flashes of it, and then all of a sudden it's just blow up city for the rest of the time that he's up with the big club. And we saw this a little bit with Blake Snell. He came up 2016, had a few starts, looked pretty good. Last year, kind of all over the place, not great, not terrible, was sent down for a little bit, came back up, ERA over 4. I like what I'm seeing so far this year with Snell as far as he's given up a pretty low hard contact rate, right around 27%, just around 28%. The only thing I don't like about him is I don't like, obviously, the offense that's behind him. I mean, the Rays offense is the Rays offense. You've got CJ Cron, Denard Span, et al. Carlos Gomez, just not impressive. So I think kind of like what Van said with the Zach Godley thing is you're not going to get a lot of wins there. The stadium's not real. It's pretty conducive to him pitching well. So that he does have on his side. But I think of these two, I'm going to stick with Blake Snell over Jameson Taillon for the rest of the season.
All right. So let's move up a little bit there. So by the way that we were talking before the podcast, you would rather have him than Jeff Samardzija at 44. So how about the other guys that we had talked about? John Gray, Johnny Cueto. Are you putting him in front of those guys?
No, I don't think so. I'm kind of in between you guys on John Gray. I think there's a lot of potential there. I don't know if I'd necessarily say he's ace material, but I mean, the start tonight is just lights out. I mean, I know it's, you know, and San Diego's not that bad of an offense, really. I mean, it's not putting huge run numbers up on the board, but 11 Ks in that amount of innings is pretty good for him, especially with the one walk and course. So I'd probably put him above Snell. I'd probably put Cueto above Snell just because the track record's longer. I mean, he's had, you know, a great career. He was a guy that I pegged as a bounce back guy that I tried to get in a few places that I was able to get. And I'm really reaping the benefits from that. But no, I wouldn't put Snell above either one of those guys either. Definitely not Jeff Samardzija.
Okay, so we're in the 30s, and that's, I will say, I've started working up my top 100 starting pitchers for Razzball that's going to start coming out on Sundays, and I'm pretty well in lockstep with you guys. I do have Blake Snell at number 30 overall, actually, right in front of Johnny Cueto at 31 in my cursory rankings without too much tinkering, and I've got John Gray down at 40 and Sean Manaea at 34. So that's how I have them ranked. So, well, pretty close there, I guess. I definitely am a Snell believer. Definitely sucks as far as wins go on that team. You're not going to get a whole lot.
Yeah, no.
And I did see a thing that I thought of you. It made me depressed. That basically said that the Rays are as much as eliminated from the playoffs already.
Yeah, it's not. It's just a matter. Yeah, it's just a matter of time before they start selling pieces off. I wish Alex Colome would actually pitch well so they could trade him and get something for him. Because that basically, as a Rays fan, that's the only thing you look forward to is the trades that they're going to make and the prospects they might get.
That's also depressing. Who's the player he's hurt right now? He had Tommy John surgery. I think the Cubs signed him, and he's not going to come back till at the earliest at the end of this year. He, I believe, was a Rays prospect. I'm blanking on his name. Do you guys know who I'm talking about?
the Cubs got him?
I think the Cubs signed him this offseason.
Drew Smyly?
Smyly, and...
Yeah, he's actually originally a Tigers prospect, but yeah, the Rays had him for a while. Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah, I just, for whatever reason, I always get Smyly and Snell mixed up in my head, and I know they're two completely different people, obviously, but for whatever reason, they're always interchangeable in my mind until I sit down, look at the numbers, and go, oh, that's right, this one's actually pitching. But I do like both of them, and I really like what Snell's done this year. I think he's taken some steps forward, so he's probably going to be a target that I'm going to look at next year for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I just cringe every time I hear the name Drew Smyly because I still remember what injury he had, and I don't even know what happened or what it is, but it was to his bursa sac. And just the phrase bursa sac just grosses me out. I don't know.
That is pretty horrible.
Oh, I don't even know what you do to a bursa sac, but it's whatever it is horrible, and I don't ever want to look at Drew Smyly again, or own him for that matter. So let's move on to legit or quit. We're going to feature one fine gentleman here whose name is Christian Villanueva. We haven't talked about him on the podcast yet, but he has 7 home runs in 19 games and a slash line of 355, 444, 774. Which is pretty fun. 13 runs scored and 16 RBI, and he's thrown in a steal just for good measure. So, Ron, we'll kick it out to you first. Christian Villanueva, are you buying it, legit or quit?
I'm going to buy in between kind of the production that he has now. So I'm going to say quit, just because there's some things that I look at across his line that give me a little bit of reason for pause. Number one, he's striking out almost 30% of the time, and he still has an OBP of 444. How does he have that? Because he has a BABIP of 441. I don't think that he's going to be able to sustain a 441 BABIP and a 419 ISO for a good part of the season. So I think you enjoy this while it lasts now. I'm not to say that he's going to completely go in the tank. I think he still has potential to put up some solid numbers. He did hit 20 home runs in AAA last year before he got called up. In his call-up last year, in the 32 plate appearances that he had, was decent, but the problem there was he struck out again 30% of the time, and he did not walk once in any of those plate appearances. So, and another insanely high BABIP and ISO. So I don't know necessarily if you're not going to see production at this level. It's going to tail off. But I think realistically, you know, with him already having 7 home runs, if he gets consistent playing time, you could see 20 homers. But to me, he's kind of a buy or a sell high guy. If you can get something for him and somebody will give you something, I think I would sell high right now.
He's kind of an interesting case. Traditionally, he hits for a BABIP maybe 30, 40 points higher than his batting average. And he's hit for a decent average in the minors and, of course, here in the majors. So I think even if that BABIP falls down to the, I don't know, 330 range, he could still hit 290, 300, something along the rest of the way. The power is obviously a bit more than it has been in the minors, but in 2017, with both the Padres and their AAA squad, he had 24 home runs and 485 at-bats. He's got the 7 homers now and the 72, or plate appearances, excuse me. And so I think if he somehow manages to get 500 plate appearances, he could probably hit 25-plus home runs. So I think the power is probably somewhat legit. The steals are going to be less than double digits, so that's kind of a non-issue for me. He is walking 8.3% of the time, and he's always kind of hovered in that 7 to 10% range, just depending on the year. So I think that's kind of legit that the OBP is going to be okay there. I like him, and I would say that whatever cost you paid for him was probably nothing. So you might as well just hang on to him and see what kind of value you can get it, unless somebody shoots you an offer because they're just, you know, all in, fully believing whatever he's going to do. But I think he's going to provide some value and going to be a steady presence in the lineup for the rest of the season, as long as he continues hitting at least somewhat like he is now. And I think he should.
Yeah, I think overall, I guess I would say that I would quit him just because I'm trying to sell high on him if I can. And I kind of hate this because it seems like I might have fallen into my own trap that I try so hard to avoid. And that's like owning an incumbent guy and, you know, sort of hoping for one guy to succeed. And that guy's Corey Spangenberg, and sort of just looking past the other guy who's performing at a high level. And, you know, just like, oh, this guy sucks, he's nothing, just totally writing him off. So in my crazy 24-team score sheet dynasty league, I want Corey Spangenbergen. So I was hoping super hard for him to succeed. And just, like I said, just kind of dismissed via Nueva. So, you know, like you guys said, he did rake at AAA last year, 231 ISO, 296 average. And this year he's got a 39% hard contact rate, but overall just 67% contact and a 40% chase rate. Even though it's a small sample, it's still bad. And he's, I don't think that he's going to be able to hit for that much average when the strikeouts come up to him. He certainly won't finish with a 441 BABIP. But I do think that he's got a little bit of like a Paul DeJean vibe going on. So, you know, and it's at a less scarce position. So that makes him that much less valuable than even DeJong, whom I'm still not convinced on. But, you know, if he's still out there in a 12 teamer, I'd still pick him up just to ride the power and ride him while he's hot. But with, you know, with so many strikeouts, he could be prone to extended slumps, and one big slump might be enough to lose him his job with those a lot of mouths to feed out there in San Diego, even though none of them are necessarily great. But so overall, I'm selling high if I can. But let's move to our final segment now, and that is the waiver wire. And we're going to stick in San Diego with Tyson Ross. Man, let's go up to you first. You have said that you, you know, have basically written off anybody who has the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, but Tyson Ross is looking to prove you wrong here. Are you buying in on the Tyson Ross resurgence?
Boy, he is trying to make me look like an idiot. 2.81 ERA, FIP and XFIP like him at right about 3.25. Strikeouts are just a bit under one per inning. Walks are good. I'm kind of shocked it's happening, and I don't think it's going to continue because, I mean, we've seen him the last couple of years just be atrocious. So ever since coming back from the surgery, I don't know. I think that there's entirely a chance that he performs and performs well enough to give a benefit to your fantasy team. I just don't know that I want to be the guy relying on him to do that. I feel like if I had him on my team and I don't, I'm going to be trying to move him right now. And just the way I would do that is say something like, yeah, you know, I know he's performing right now, but I have more needs elsewhere, whether or not I need pitching or not. And just trying to get another piece for him, just because I'm really afraid that that hammer's going to drop and he's going to go back to being just terrible. He hasn't thrown more than, what, 70 innings since 2015. So I don't think the innings total is going to be that high. Maybe he can get to 140, 150. But if he does, is he going to wear out? Is he going to lose performance just because he's tiring? Also, the thoracic outlet syndrome, is that going to adversely affect him just suddenly? We don't know. So short answer is I think I'm just going to avoid him, even though he's performing really, really well.
Where are you going to plug in your thoracics anymore?
You put it in the... I don't have anything. Sorry.
Oh, I know it's a nasty cast, but we got to draw the line somewhere.
No thoracic plugging. I think the FCC would be mad if we did some thoracic plugging.
Eminem would have been a good song to do with the British Bake Off thing earlier.
Well, the song that I did, you know, it had Eminem in it. It wasn't his
true
verse, but
fair true enough.
True that, true that. Well, Van, I'm here to tell you the hammer has dropped on Tyson Ross because he got lit up a little bit today. Four innings, four runs. Did have seven Ks in those four innings, but didn't have the greatest of outings today. And the ERA is up at 3.64. So I will say FIP and XFIP are still pretty decent. 3.07 for the FIP, XFIP 3.29. But I think kind of like what you said, Van, with Christian Villanueva, if you can add him, you know, the same thing with Tyson Ross, you probably got him for a very minimal price. I don't know that there's that many people that are going to give you much for him. And if they do, I would move him now. But I mean, if you add him on waivers, you don't really, and if it's not a fab league, you're not giving up money or you're giving up very, very little fab to get him. Maybe do it if you need a pitcher for right now and just kind of ride the production until it tails off. And then if you get rid of him, no harm, no foul, you can just send him back to waivers. So not personally a guy that I'm trusting just yet, but you know, for that minimal investment, I think you could use him for a little while and then get rid of him and no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good streamer. So that's about how I would value him. Maybe even a guy that you hold on to in like a 15 team league. But as far as 10, 12 team mixers, I'm only streaming him. He's actually gone almost fastball slider exclusively, sort of a la Patrick Corbin, except not to quite as great an extent. He's got 47% slider usage right now, which is just ridiculous. Not that he's always, you know, he's always relied pretty heavily on that, but it's still worth pointing out that he's throwing that just as much as a fastball.
You just brought up Patrick Corbin, by the way. So we all need to know that Nathan can't stand up right now in public because everyone would be offended.
I love him so much.
Actually, I think when he's talking about Patrick Corbin, he would gladly stand up in public.
That's true. Yeah. And just like put his hands on his hips.
Not impressed.
Yeah, exactly.
Pants in the pants.
And all the pants say Corbin on the butt.
And also juicy.
Yeah, juicy Corbin. That's going on the duck and menu. I'm gonna have those for supper tomorrow. So yeah, he's getting 16% whiffs on the slider, I guess I should say. Not that that's superb or anything, but you know, hey, that's a lot of sliders. So anyway, yeah, just give him a stream in shallower formats. I would definitely be holding on to him just in case this is something that he can sustain over the course of a full season. I think in a 15-team league, then that's deep enough for me to take that plunge. But Harlan, the Marlon Garcia, Ron, what do you think about him? Are you picking him up on the waiver wire?
You know, it's one of those things that I keep waiting for him to have a terrible start, and I keep waiting for him to the production to kind of tail off, and it hasn't done that yet, and he doesn't really. I'm probably going to leave him on the waiver wire just because he doesn't really strike anybody out. He's averaging a whopping 6.6 K per nine. He's still averaging 4 walks per 9 innings. I don't think he's going to keep up his 99% strand rate. And so I don't think that that translates into the 1 ERA sticking around for very much longer either. So I really don't know how he's doing this. He's kind of pitching above his head. And no, I'm going to kind of leave him out there because I don't think it's something that's going to stick around. So no, I'm out.
Yeah, you know, if you look at his pitch tracks, FX, whatever thing on Fangraphs.
Nailed it.
Yeah, exactly. you can see how far down his velocity is from last year. Last year, he was throwing 94 to 98 miles an hour. This year, he's closer to 92. So, I mean, you could see that there's a complete difference from what he used to be. And what he used to be was he used to be able to throw hard and still not strike people out. Now that he doesn't throw hard, he still doesn't strike people out. So I read a story about him and something positive, like his mom has some sickness and he's performing well and getting money for his family. And I think that's awesome and it makes him worth rooting for. But I'm going to separate fantasy from, you know, my real life hubris, if you will, and just say,
not just your hubris!
Just say that, no, I have no interest in him. I think it's going to catch up to him. FIP has him at 399, XFIP at 457, and I don't believe XFIP a whole lot compared to, say, FIP or even Sierra, but I think that 4 ARA is coming, and it's going to come hard because he's also walking guys at a 4 clip, 4 walks per 9, so not worth picking up, in my opinion. Maybe if you need a streamer and he's facing off against the Padres, sure, you throw him on there. Or if he's got, you know, maybe a mediocre offensive team coming at home, you pick him up. But I think there's something drastically wrong with him for his velocities to be as low as they are. And I just don't foresee this continuing. I think he's confusing people right now at 27 innings, but it's not going to keep going.
Yeah, and I will say that the velocity is probably down because he was pitching out of the bullpen last year, so his velocity is probably just up from last year in the shorter stints. But just another starting pitching streamer, I guess, on a crappy team. I think that's all Harlan is here, or Jarlin, however you say it. 20 strikeouts and 12 walks over 27 innings is gross, and he's got a worse-than-league average hard contact rate of 34% so far. Awful swing strike rates. There's just not a lot to like here. And yeah, like you said, not a lot of strikeouts. So he's a pass for me as well. But Van, what do you think about Mac Williamson out there in San Fran?
Jarlin. Now that's what you call in the South when you go to the jar store and there's a cute girl working behind the counter and her dad owns the jar store and you have to, you know, get distracted.
Hello,
the dad.
Jarlin.
Like, hey, Jarlin, why don't you come on over here and show me what kind of jars you got? And, you know, jugs that you can pee in and then play like a... Like, that's what you'd buy at the store. All right, moving on. Mac Williamson. He is a Giant, and he is hitting really well right now. But he's also doing that thing where the OBP is the exact same as the average because he hasn't walked. Now, it's only 20 plate appearances. And in the minors, he has walked at an okay clip, but he's not doing it now. He's mostly just swinging a lot. And even with a 231 BABIP, that batting average is really high up there. But if you don't strike out much, obviously the BABIP's going to be fairly low, and you're still going to have an average. I'm just not buying it, short answer. 382 plate appearances in his main stop of AAA in 2017, had 14 home runs and 4 steals. He just feels like fourth outfielder material, and I think that's the best that you're going to get. He's performing well now, but I think maybe he's enough to keep Hunter Pence on the bench. But even that said, when Hunter Pence comes back, I think they split at best. So just not a guy that I foresee getting a lot of playing time and really succeeding while he's doing it. The guy to watch for me in San Francisco is, of course, the guy that I bid $21 of my $100 fab on last year, and that's Austin Slater in the minors, AC Slater. If he comes up, he's a guy that I would care more for. Mack Williamson, not that interested in.
Yeah, same here. It's another case of when Hunter Pence comes back, it kind of makes the outfield crowded, and you know, you're not pushing Andrew McCutchen to the bench. Austin Jackson, I'm really not sure why he's there. But Hunter Pence could be the guy, like Van said. But yeah, I don't see a whole lot of flashy production here. You know, it's something that if you need somebody maybe in a deep league, just as kind of a outfield streamer, we talked about the pitchers like that, he could be a guy you could look at. But I think for the long term, I think he's just going to kind of be a guy that's out there. I don't really see this the lasting. I don't see the 300 average lasting. I don't know about the amount of homers you're going to get. So I think you could kind of look elsewhere for production, but I'm really not looking at the Mac Daddy here.
Well, you're both morons because Williamson, yeah. He visited the hitting coach that made Justin Turner an actual star this past year and reworked his swing. So supposedly that's reaping rewards already. So I'm a more optimistic on him. I think if you can still find room for him in a 12 teamer, I'd do it. He's probably picked up and everything deeper. If he's not, then I would go grab him just in case he can sustain this a new level that he might have found. But you know, you're potentially getting pretty good power and average from him. So I would at least speculate, I guess, on him if I had a spot to fiddle with in a 12 teamer. Kind of roll through these guys quickly, I guess, since we're running a little bit long. But Ron, we've got Junior Guerra here. Are you picking him up?
I think of the pitchers we talked about, he's the most likely that I would try to add in a deeper league. It wouldn't be anything more at I'd say 12 teamer at the shallowest that I would look out to get him. I like the offense that's behind him. I don't think he's going to sustain the production he's putting up now. But overall, I think he's a guy out of the ones we've talked about that I would probably be the most likely to add.
Yeah, I completely agree. He's shown flashes of brilliance in the past. He can strike a batter out, at least to an extent. I think he's probably not going to give you a lot of innings because he just threw 100 last year. He's never really topped, 140 in a season. So I think that's kind of the maximum you're going to see. He's definitely a guy I would pick up and stream right now and keep on my bench, even if I have better options, just to see what you can get out of him, because I think he'll provide some value across the board and the metrics like him. So I definitely think there's value to be had until he gets hurt, which ultimately will happen. But until that happens, sure, keep him on your bench, spot start him, see what you can get out of him.
I think I'm actually a little bit more excited for Tyson Ross than I am for Junior Guerra, but I definitely have more interest in Guerra than Harlan Garcia. Guerra so far just getting a ton of soft contact, almost as much soft contact as hard contact, 25% versus 27%. Seems to have picked up a tick of velocity. I'm not quite sure exactly how he's got 15 strikeouts in 16 innings with just an 8.2% swinging strike rate and a 23% chase rate. So I'm not fully buying into him being this good yet, but I'm definitely willing to spot start him, especially in favorable road matchups. But Ben, what about Kurt Suzuki, who's been lighting the world on fire?
I believe it entirely because he did it last year. And I saw someone post the other day about if he gets full-time at bats, he could be a top five catcher. And I disagree with that because I think if he gets full-time at bats, he's a bit overexposed, which we've seen earlier in his career. But I think something changed. He altered the way he swings. He is just maybe grown into himself now that he's in his, you know, age 34 season or whatever it may be. And I think he's the same guy he was last year when he hit 19 homers and 309 plate appearances, hit 283, currently hitting 327. So I completely buy in. And in fact, in any leagues where I've had a hurt catcher, Suzuki's still been out there. And so he's the guy I scoop up, plug him in as my second catcher, and just love the production.
Yeah, same here. The only thing that sucks for him, though, Tyler Flowers will be coming back pretty soon, so it'll be interesting to see how the split goes. But this is a situation that I talked about in the preseason that, you know, if you can get both of these guys, if you can roster two catchers and you can alternate them on days that they each start, your production could be way better than you might think. It even kind of bordered upon Gary Sanchez type numbers. Now, I don't know if that, you know, we're taking last year's numbers and combining them together, and a lot of things have to kind of shake out. But Kurt Suzuki right now is a really productive guy at that spot. And Van, like you said, he's a guy that with other injuries that you might have plucked off of waivers and gotten for nothing. And he's been, you know, one of your more productive offensive guys. Now, I think if he's going to stay the starter, I don't think that you see the production sustain itself like that, but I still think it's going to be really good. And even when Tyler Flowers comes back, you know, it could be something where Suzuki might have played himself into maybe a little bit more of the timeshare there. But Tyler Flowers is definitely going to eat into the at-bats, and I think I read where he's starting a rehab assignment pretty soon. So hopefully you got on this guy a few weeks ago and you've been enjoying the production now, because it might tail off a little bit, but I don't know if it's going to tail off to the point where you're going to get rid of him at the catcher spot.
I tell you what, this 12-team league that I'm in, I believe it was the Rasmo Writers League. I'm in so many leagues, I can't remember, but somebody dropped him. They're like streaming catchers, and so I'm going to pick him up. And I've got Evan Gattis, I believe, in that league. I'm just bought in on Suzuki, and I think I might have figured out what it actually was, Van, that changed for him, because he, ever since he switched to an axe handle bat, he's been hitting like this, basically. It was like late May last year when he switched to that new bat, and ever since then, he's just been on fire. Over the second half last year, he had 311 with 12 home runs. His hard contact rate jumped up nearly 7%, up to 36.4%. And, you know, obviously in 2018, he's not stopping. So I think he's easily a top 12 catcher moving forward. And maybe he is a top five catcher, you know, even with a little less playing time. I mean, there are very few catchers that get that, you know, a ton of at bats anyway, you know, like the Buster Posey's that you know, play first base on their days off from catching. So you know, Tyler Flowers will obviously eat into his value a little bit, but I think that he's going to hit well enough and get enough playing time, just because catcher is so ugly, to be probably even a top 10 catcher. So
hate,
I'm looking
those
to
bats.
Pick him up all over the place.
Hate those do bats, you? By the way, they're best utilized because what they do is they keep you from turning over your wrists. Because of the way the handle's structured, it'll keep your hands, you know, straight as you go through the zone. But I cannot stand them. They're so awkward to me, because when I hit with basically three fingers of my left hand on the bat, my pinky wraps around the nub on the end of the bat, and that's just what's comfortable to me. And you can't do that with an axe handle bat because they're just so weirdly placed. So good for him, but no thank you. I can't stand those things.
Yeah, it's fun reading the article, and I might just write about him tomorrow. But yeah, he thought that it was kind of gimmicky until he tried it. And then he's like, oh, wow, this really works. And he was the only one on the Twins that used it. But anyway, CJ, or well, yeah, that was back when he was with the Twins. So let's see. CJ Krohn, Ron, our last guy here.
Yeah, real quick, deeper league, sure, why not? The only thing is, he's going to be hitting, it looks like right now, towards the top of the lineup. I think they had him in the two spot tonight. So it just kind of, once again, it's the Rays offense. So don't expect a lot of RBIs. Don't expect a lot of runs scored. But he's been hitting some bombs here. He paid off for me a couple times that I've gone with him in the daily game with home runs. So I think you'll see, you know, maybe about a 250, 260 average, some homers. Just, you know, it's going to be one of those scenarios where you're just not going to get a lot of RBIs out of him. I'd like to see him move him down a little bit in the lineup, so he would have a little bit more shot at some run production. But I think he's worth a shot in some deeper leagues if you need a corner infielder. A corner infielder.
Yeah, and it's going to depend on how desperate you are for your team to fill in a spot. Like, if you have some injuries, he's a 260 hitter, maybe 270 in the best of years, and if he gets 500 plate appearances, he'll hit 22 home runs, and that's what he always was with the Angels, although he just never got the plate appearances because Mike Scioscia hated him. But I think with the Rays, he'll get the plate appearances, and if he does, you'll get those home runs. You're not going to get any walks because he just doesn't do that, so the OBP is not going to be great, so the runs scored aren't going to be great. RBIs aren't going to be great because he's on a bad team, but you'll get some empty home runs and the average won't kill you. So if you can utilize that and you need that, take it. But don't expect, you know, a 300 hitter with 30 plus home runs.
Yeah, no, by no means. In fact, I think that his approach is so bad that he's going to have a hard time even hitting 240. I mean, 24 strikeouts and two walks right now, just crushing the ball, 44% hard contact. So, that contact rate, though, that's down to an all-time low 70%. So he just appears to be just saying, F any semblance of an approach. I'm just going to swing out of my shoes every time. I'm going to hit 30 home runs. I don't care what kind of average I hit for. So, if you get 30 home runs, I bet he sort of negates that value with like a 230, 240 batting average. If you're in a deep league and you need the power, then sure, I think he can be a short-term stopgap. But there's definitely other guys that I like. If I can help it in like a 15-team league, he wouldn't even crack my utility unless I'm scuffling for injury replacements. But boys, that's going to do us. So before we get out of here, let's get our plugs out of the way. Van, what you got coming up?
Just published something on fantrax.hq.com. Oh, I almost said Fangraphs. I goofed it up. Fantraxhq.com. Where I discussed some prospects who you could get for possibly a cheaper value than perhaps at the beginning of the season. Names are like Lewis Brinson, other guys whom I've already forgotten about.
Robles was in there,
yes. Anyway, go take a look at that just because it'll help you in your dynasty leagues as far as maybe some guys you can target if you're in the rebuilding phase. Or if you're in the winning phase and you need someone to trade, look at it from that way. We've also got the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast, which we'll be recording shortly. Last week's episode, there was a little bit of a snafu, so it didn't get posted until Monday, I believe. So that's out now. We'll have the new one up tomorrow, as well as this show. And then I also do the Launch Angle podcast with Jeffrey Zimmerman and Rob Silver. That one's already up. So as you're listening to this, you can go listen to that one as well. Go download and listen. Check out my work on Fantrax HQ and check out these boys' work. So, Ron, take it away. What are you working on?
This weekend I've got Fantistics. You can see my player analysis from Friday night and Saturday night. So those will be posted Saturday and Sunday. And then over Big Guy Fantasy Sports, we get the salesman Matt Sells doing the pitching prospects this year. I'm going to stick with the hitting prospects, and so I'm going to be giving you not so many of those articles as I was in the past. I think we might do it once every couple weeks or once every month, but I'm going to give you some hitters. Because over there I kind of focus on maybe people that don't play that aren't as familiar with the dynasty stuff. So I'm going to give you some hitters maybe that'll help you in some yearly leagues that could get called up. Kind of the next wave after we get Acuna up here and we get some of these guys up. Also, we'll be doing Bob Lung and I'll be on the Consistency Football Show this Sunday night. We'll be talking starting wide receiver consistency previews and just kind of talking about the draft a little bit as well, and looking at some of the wideouts from last year and how that consistency is going to translate over into 2018 and in your drafts coming up.
All right, and I just wanted to sort of a fact checking of myself. I went back to that article that I was reading earlier, and it is, in fact, from 2016 for Kurt Suzuki as far as switching to the axe handle bat. And he was garbage in the second half of that season with the Twins. It was last year when he moved to the Braves that he really caught fire. And so it's still a mystery why he's good, but he's good. But it's probably not solely because of that axe handle bat. But as far as what I have coming up now that our corrections are out of the way. Let's see. I've got, as my aforementioned, I'm going to start doing the top 100 starting pitchers over at Razzball. I'm also going to be doing pitchers for them. And I got my Fire and Ice rolling out on Fridays over at Fantrax HQ. So with that, next is going to be no guest, but we'll be back at you with some red hot fantasy baseball action. So until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.